Welcome to week three of the SoCal WrestlePod. I'm your host, Eric Howard, coming to you from beautiful San Diego, California. And this week we have the new ultra lightweight champion from PCW Ultra, Jay Vidal, on the show. It's going to be a quick introduction. I'm going on vacation, and there will be no episode next week, but we'll be back in business here in a week or two. I do want you to reach out to my sponsor, very thankful to have them as a sponsor, Home Turf, 619-467-7784. Any Southern California turf needs, synthetic grass, they can do retaining walls, pavers, all kinds of stuff. Go to Home Turf, 619-467-7784. Or HomeTurfSD.com. So again, guys, quick intro this week. Enjoy your Halloween. By the time you hear this, Halloween will already pass. Never mind. I hope you had a good Halloween. How about that? I hope you guys all dressed as your favorite wrestlers for Halloween. Hope you guys have a good time. And enjoy this chat with Jay Vidal. See you guys in a couple weeks. Thank you. Give me peace of mind that can't be beat, yeah. My town, on my street. Give me peace of mind that can't be beat. Give me peace of mind that can't be beat. Hey guys, we're joined by the current PCW Ultra Lightweight Champion, Jay Vidal. PCW Ultra's next event is their anniversary event, taking place on January 28th, 2022. Can't believe I'm saying 2022 already. Tickets are already available at pcwultra.eventbrite.com. They will sell out, guys, and Jay will be making his first title defense at that show. And guys, it's Jay time. Welcome to the show, Jay Vidal.
Oh, thank you so much. I am super excited to be a part of it. And yes, it is Jay time. It is Jay season. We are pushing it and we are in full gear right now.
Jay season. I like that. I like that a lot. So, Jay, you just won the belt at the PCW show. Tell me a little bit about working PCW Ultra and the event they just had.
Well, it was actually my debut at All Systems Go. I had never wrestled for PCW before. I was super excited to be a part of it. And it was such a welcoming environment. Like, we got over there to the back. Some people don't know this. We had Joseph, the Almighty Sheik, who is a great mastermind, has 25 years experience helping, you know, us younger guys, as well as Kevin Sullivan, which was, man, like I never thought that I'd say that, you know, Kevin Sullivan would help me with a match. But here we are, man. Like, you know, they both together, they have 75 you know, combined years experience, and to pick their brain, for them to help us and, you know, lead us into the right way, lead us to where this business has to be. It was amazing, truly an amazing experience.
And PCW does a really good job of on social media, boosting up the shows and matches. And also the live events are very professionally done as well, with the lighting and the whole setup is very nice.
Yeah, it you know, you got like those, what do you call those, that scaffold with the lights, the
lighting rig. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was something. Just when you're in there, you feel like you're on a stage. The lights are on you, the crowd, it's a high like none other. I've never wrestled in front of a crowd like the PCW crowd in and of themselves, like they just have a certain energy that I have yet to receive from any other crowd.
So Jay, have you always been wanting the attention or the be an entertainer? Was that always in your DNA?
Always, since an early age. I remember my earliest memory is going out into the living room and seeing Big Show double chokeslam Kai and Tai, Funaki and Takamichi Noku. And it's crazy to think that I saw that and I said, yes, this is what I want to do.
So it wasn't like anything else. It wasn't, you know, I want to be an actor. I want to be this. It's like, I want to be a wrestler.
Never. It's always been, I want to be a wrestler. People have told me, oh, you should model. You should do. Nope. Wrestling is what I am on this planet to do, I believe.
Well, he does have an OnlyFans, guys. So if you want to check that out, so you can.
Yes. If you want to subscribe, that's about the closest that you'll get to modeling, because I'm sure modeling agencies will be a little bit mad to know that I might get kicked in the face every weekend.
So what does your family think about, like, when you say you want to be a wrestler when you're a kid? What's your family say, like, something like that?
you know, it's their mentality toward it has changed. But at first, you know, it was just the pat on the shoulder, like, all right, okay, yeah. You know, like,
sure,
they, I don't
sure,
think
sure, 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 yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I don't think that they actually thought that I would pursue this full on, but I've opened up about this recently in other podcasts. I didn't have the easiest upbringing in life. Unfortunately, my mother was an addict. So I feel like when you have a tougher upbringing, you see how, you know, how short life can be. Luckily, she's still alive. She's still with us. But, you know, you see how life could take a turn. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to make something better for yourself. And my thing has always been, I never want to be on my deathbed and wonder what if.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So where did you grow up at?
I actually grew up in Pompano Beach, Florida. I was born in San Juan, Puerto Rico, but my dad and my mom wanted to give us a better life. So we moved out to Vegas till I was about 9 years old. And most of my life after that, we just moved over to sunny South Florida.
So you like the sunshine, you like the heat.
Yeah, I am more used to the to the sun and the rain and everything. I moved back over to the West Coast by myself just to take a chance on myself about 2 years back.
Mm. So let's talk about you go from watching the Big Show Choking Slam Kai to at what point does it become fandom to want to start looking to see where I can start training at? How does that happen?
That happens, I want to say I was about 18 years old, almost about to go on 19, and I just was depressed. I was miserable. And I realized that was because I wasn't doing what I wanted to in life. So I Googled wrestling schools near me. And back then, what people don't know is, you know, wrestling schools didn't really always put their stuff on Google or didn't have websites up until more recently. Back then, the only schools that really had Google were, like, you know, the Lance Storms, mm-hmm. wrestling academies in Canada or Texas Wrestling Academy. So I always thought to myself, well, I'm going to probably pack my stuff up and move to Texas. But luckily I Googled it, and Coastal Championship Wrestling actually had a website, and it was super nearby. So I ended up giving them a call. I spoke to the promoter, and next thing I know, I'm driving. He tells me, hey, you know what I mean, brother? Come over. This and that. This is the deal. And I remember just driving up, and the first person I see as I'm pulling into the school, believe it or not, is Gangrel just walking right in front of my car. And he'll tell you that, you know, the little, we call it like our funny story, because he didn't know who I was. It's not a good neighborhood. It was a warehouse and like a not a good neighborhood at all. So he doesn't know who I am. I'm over there like pulling up right in front of him. He's walking past my car, and the first thing that I'm over here, like, you know, marking out, super excited, saying, oh my God, because Gangrel's walking right in front of my car, and he looks directly at me and says, the F you looking at?
See, if I'm playing this out in my head, and I just see him walking around with a chalice full of wine, just walking in the parking lot every like 24/7, 365, he's just got a chalice in his hand.
And the puffy white shirt.
Yeah, exactly. And his fangs, always fangs.
Exactly.
So yeah, as you're telling me the story, I'm recreating it in my head. I'm like just closing my eyes and like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then there's going to be blood falling from the sky at some point.
Exactly how you imagined it is literally how it happened in the moment.
So, okay. Tell me a little bit about training. Did it come easy to you? Was it hard?
Some things came easy. Some things were a little bit more difficult. I definitely think that I was able to adapt to most of the things right away when it came to the moves and everything. When it came to taking the bumps, you know, the bumps sucked. Like it really humbles you when you take that first bump, because you're just like, all right, there's actually an art form to everything about this. And the first year and a half, you think you know things. Then by the second year, oh, I know everything. And then by the third year, you're like, I know absolutely nothing. I'm still at a point where I know nothing. And I'm just, you know, soaking up knowledge from every person that I come by. But for the most part, I do feel like I was able to adapt to everything. I'm not gonna say it came easy, but I was able to adapt to everything because I'm a firm believer in, you know, repetition and hard work.
So I jump back and forth here. So you gotta jump timelines with me a little bit here. So when you were younger, were you an athlete at all? Did you participate in sports or anything?
Nothing. The most athletic thing I think I ever did was I just jumped on my bed pretending to be Jeff Hardy. That was about as athletic as I got. I was never really into sports. I did do gymnastics for about, I believe, a month, maybe 2 months. That's literally as far as my athleticism goes.
So tell me why you thought you could wrestle if you didn't have an athletic background.
Oh, because I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it. And it's no, you know, disrespect to people who get into it that don't love it. But I believe that this is one of those things, this business, you have to love it to be a part of it. If you don't love it, there's no way that you're going to get far with it. I've seen professional athletes from different walks of life get into it and just quit because they you know, only watch wrestling once or only doing it because their friend said that they thought it would be cool if they did. You got to love this business. And I always knew that if there's one thing that I had, nobody's going to have more of a heart for it than I will, was my mentality walking into it.
Good. So early in your training, who was part of your support system to help you through the tough days of training?
Gangrel. Gangrel was always the one to get me through it. He would definitely be the one to just, you know, like push me the hardest. He gave me that old school training. And that old school training was exactly what I needed because I'm not one that really learns, you know, right away from like, oh, it's okay, you got to do this. Like, no, he would yell and, you know what I mean? Like push me to my absolute limits, like to a point where I wanted to cry, but without that type of training, I would not be where I am today.
So tell me what old school training means. I'm not sure what that means.
Just, you know, I guess there's ways that people might adjust nowadays, you know, to be, how can I put this? To be kinder. And I am all for that. But like, you see the best coaches in this world, they're yelling at their athletes, you know, they are literally like yelling to try to get through to them. That's the type of style of training that Gangrel gives. And, you know, without that style of training, he wouldn't have trained guys, you know, like Jacob Fatu, or who's also part of PCW, you know, or, you know, guys like Rusev. Like it's, you need that style of training to make it to the next level. In my opinion, everybody is trained differently. Everybody gets things through their head differently. I needed that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've participated in team sports before too. And my favorite coaches were the ones that yelled at me when I needed to be yelled at and hugged me when I needed to be hugged.
Exactly. And that's how he would be. He would always like, you know, push me to my limits. And when he saw that I would get in my head, like on my worst days, I would walk down, you know, leave the training center with my head down. And then he would, you know, send me a text like, you know, like you did a good job. You're doing all right. Don't worry about it.
So at what point in training was it like, okay, I'm training. I actually think I can do this.
I was blessed enough that I was able to train every day that they had training at this point. About, I want to say 4.5 months in is when I had my very first one-on-one match with one of my coaches, Jimmy Gennetti. And at that point, when they offered me, like, you know, they said, hey, like, we think you're ready for a match. It's going to be Humble Beginnings. Yeah, it was at a flea market in Opa-locka, Florida. Probably the most
Opa-locka is a swap meet, huh?
Yes, you know about it. The world
famous swap meet. Yeah.
Yes, the Opa-locka flea market. And if you've been there, it is not the most, you know. Yeah, the floors are a little sticky. None of the people walking by are wrestling fans. They're all just there to, you know, get nice, you know, affordable clothes and stuff.
Mini donuts. Like, hey, get out of my way. I want to buy my mini donuts.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The food there was definitely was actually pretty good. But, you know, they had those little like Cuban coffee shops. But, oh, man, it was absolutely it was very humbling, a very humbling experience. But in the moment, I just remember being in the middle of that ring and thinking, this is the best moment of my life.
Oh, that's awesome. Were you nervous as all get out too?
Man, I was super nervous. I had my dad there. My sister was there. And I just remember thinking to myself, I can't mess this up. I can't mess this up. I got this. I'll listen. And I can't tell you much from that match because I was so nervous at my adrenaline. Now I've learned to calm myself down and tell myself at least once during a match, I need to look around and soak this all in. Like, I got ADHD, so I do apologize if I bounce back and forth also. But like,
we're in trouble. We're going to be a ping pong match here, bud.
I know, right? But like, for example, like at the PCW show, you know, like once before the, right before the match, I remember just like stopping and soaking everything in, like, okay, I'm here. Like I worked this hard. I made it. Once I won the title, it was like, okay, I worked this hard. I made it. But like in that moment at the Opa-locka flea market for my first match, my brain did not think that way. It was all adrenaline, all on go. I can't tell you a lot from that match. I remember off the top of my head, but I remember that the finish was a pile drivers because I really wanted to take a pile driver. So I thought that was really cool.
So you say names like Gangrel and Jimmy Jannetty. It sounds carny as all get out. Is it?
Yes.
So tell me about training with Gangrel. You said he was rough on you. What about like the X's and O's of, you know, just like learning moves and learning wrestling? How much was he involved in that aspect of your training?
Oh, he was involved in all of it. So basically, long story short, there was this era in my life where I was partying a lot. And around that era of my life, I want to say that I started my training in 2016. I want to say that this is about 2017, from July of 2017 to about December 2017. This whole time, he didn't have his school yet. He was just a coach at the Coastal Championship Wrestling. And he would only train there about once or twice a week. I used to pick him up. He used to ask me to pick him up, which he did not need a ride. It would always be so that he could like drop knowledge on me on the way there and on the way back. I had a point where I just, you know, you kind of like discover, you know, what clubs are and everything. And down in Miami, it was 18 and up clubs. So I just started, you know, not being focused, not going to school as or training as much as I should have. And I finally came back in about December, and in about December, he ended up having a falling out with the owner. So he leaves and makes Gangrel's Wrestling Asylum. And around this time, he saw that I was getting focused again. And he never asked me to come to his school. He just said, hey, you know, it's up to you. Like, I'm always going to be here, you know, as a friend, regardless. And I always knew that he would be able to take me to that next level, and he actually cared about me. So I ended up hopping over to Gangrel's Wrestling Asylum, and he basically retrained me from the ground up. So there were other coaches over at Coastal Championship Wrestling teaching that were, I guess, in a sense above him because they owned the school at the time. Mm-hmm. But so he kind of like, when I went to Asylum, he retrained me on the bad habits that I had from the ground up. So literally every aspect of my training, Gangrel has been involved.
Tell me some fun Gangrel stories. There has to be a gazillion of them.
Oh my goodness. I'm trying to think of a few just off the top of my head.
Has everybody just like, that is so carny, like a so carny moment with Gangrel? So, I mean, he's old school. There just has to be like, that was super carny.
I do specifically remember one time that we had a match for the very first time in front of a crowd, which actually earlier this year, and I'm super grateful that it happened because we never, he and I never went one-on-one, but we did in Florida when I went over there. I want to say, was it February, over at Gang Girls Wrestling Asylum? He actually had surgery. I believe that he had, I can't remember exactly what he had, but he had like a very minor surgery. I want to say was maybe he lifted something too heavy, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't cleared to wrestle. I got there and I guess he got cleared that morning for physical activity. So he says, well, I got a show going on, so I guess I'll wrestle the show. And he's like, he wrestles against me. I find out that, I walk over to him and I'm like, hey, like, you know, super happy to see him. It'd been a few months because I'd been living out here in Vegas, you know, give him the big hug. And he tells me, go talk to Anna Diaz, who he had booking his shows. He's like, go talk to her, see what your match is. This whole time he knew it was against him. So I go over to her. She's like, yeah, you got Dave tonight. You got Gangrel. And I was like, oh, okay. I did not expect that to come find out it was his first match back, but it was amazing. You know, he's calling all this great stuff for me to do for somebody who just come back from surgery. He's over there, like, you know, taking all these dives and everything on the outside.
That's awesome. So, I mean, do you still have a pretty good relationship with Gangrel?
Yes, I spoke to him on the phone about 2 or 3 days ago. We text pretty often. He's, you know, always congratulating me. Like, he texted me after he found out I won the PCW Ultralight Championship and, you know, just gave me a big congratulations text and, you know, we'll share my posts. He's, when I say he's like a dad to me, man, like, he was there with me through my absolute darkest times, and he led me in the right way, because there was a fork in the road where I could have gone towards a partying lifestyle, and it took him, who I grew up, like, you know, watching, to tell me, hey, like, you know, you have potential. And when somebody that you grow up watching tells you that you have potential, it lights something in you. Like, if he sees it in me, I got to start seeing it in myself.
So do you have regrets, like, going through that little party phase, or was it part of the journey you needed to go to experience to find your way in wrestling?
I actually have no regrets to it, because had I not gone through it, I would not see what it was. And let's say now, when I feel like I got a lot of momentum behind me, you know, the universe is leading me on a right path, I'm getting all these opportunities at my door. Imagine if I would have started partying now. Mm-hmm. Now when eyes are on me to be the best that I could be, if I were to start partying now and discover that now, it could all fall apart. But because I discovered that so early on, I see it for what it is. I had the fun that I needed to have. I took it all out of my system. Now it's just me being focused on my dreams and on my goals.
So you said Gangrel was there for you. I mean, he's had his own history with partying and stuff as well. Did he kind of share some of his experience? Not what he did, but kind of where, how your life can go sideways and how doing that kind of stuff can kind of derail you a bit.
Yes, he's always been big on being focused for that reason. He, you know, is open about, you know, how he used to party back in the day and this and that. Just telling me to stay focused, because he's seen so many people's opportunities go down the drain because of partying. And yeah, he's, as I said, you know, he's led me on the right path, and good. I'm grateful to be where I am today because of it.
So some of the people you train with, I mean, are any of them, did anybody who you thought would be good didn't stick around?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. There's people, just because of family. I actually started training with a buddy of mine who I thought would be great, but he ended up marrying a woman and having a baby. So I think other things like that will play a factor into it too. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely those two who you just see and you think, wow, are they going to be any good? And they just surprise you completely. Mm-hmm. It might take them 6 months. It might take them a year. but they just surprise you completely. It goes back to that whole thing that I talk about where, you know, dedication and hard work will always stand above anything else.
Yeah. I manage people at work at my, where I work at, and I'll take a hard worker that doesn't have the skill yet over somebody who has skill that doesn't want to work hard.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'll teach you the rest.
Exactly. Yes. It's all, as I said, it's all repetition and hard work. It'll come to you.
Exactly. So, okay. So you're in Florida. How do you decide, or when do you decide it's time to move out of Florida and try something different?
Oh, that gut feeling is a funny thing. That gut, I've always been big on just going with my gut, and that gut feeling was telling me I had to move. I don't know why, it just, something in me, summer of 2019 was telling me I got to get up and move. It's got to be to another state. I love my family to death, but they still believe in the traditional, you know, 9-to-5 job for the rest of your life. And it's just not something that I wanted to do. So I knew that if I stayed under that environment, under my parents', you know, roof, that I kind of had to abide by their rules, because it is their roof, you know, it is their house. So I said to myself, I need to move, but if I move down the street, I still have their influence on me. So I need to move to another state. And for whatever reason, Vegas just sounded like the place to go.
So don't judge me by this question, please.
No, go right ahead.
So, I mean, Florida seems like the obvious place for somebody who wants to be a wrestler to live, you know, that's aspiring to be a wrestler. It's, I mean, with, you know, the WWE being down there and AEW having, that was before, I guess, AEW is really established, but it just seems like Florida would be the place to be, not somewhere else. Did that enter your thought at all?
It partially did, but I also saw that Florida doesn't really got like, besides WWE, yeah, Florida doesn't really got like that one major company there. So, you know, in Cali, you got places like PCW. Mm-hmm. In Las Vegas, you got Future Stars of Wrestling. In Florida, it's more like smaller independent shows. And they are all very, unfortunately, things may have changed by now, but at the time that I was living there, it was all very like, if you work at one place, you can't work at another. So you're stuck working three places in all of Florida. And if you do a 9-hour drive from Fort Lauderdale all the way to Jacksonville, you know, you're still in Florida after a 9-hour drive. Vegas, I always thought was a great spot because you did have a place like Future Stars of Wrestling, which welcomed me in with open arms. And close by, you know, I drive 4 hours and I'm over now at PCW. I drive 4.5-5 hours and I'm over in Arizona. I add more states to my checklist of places that I've wrestled for.
So yeah, let's talk about Future Stars. I went to one Future Stars show. I really enjoyed it. It's when Vandergriff won a battle royal, I think.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I happen to be in Vegas, and whenever I go anywhere, it doesn't matter. I always look to see if there's a show, because I always go watch a local wrestling show just for fun. But talk about Future Stars. I mean, they've got some pretty decent talent in that locker room.
Yes, when I first moved out here, I was not doing this, and I call it a quote unquote gimmick, yeah, but it's really just me turned up to 1,000. Jay Vidal is who I am outside. The same person who I am in the ring is the same person who I'm outside the ring. Just when I'm in the ring, it's like turned up to 1,000%, which I'm a big firm believer in. You got to be who you are. Turned up to 1,000, because if you play a character, they're going to know you're playing a character.
Fans are smarter than some people think.
Exactly. Then a lot of, yeah, like it's, you know, once you start playing with the fans is, you know, they're what they're mentally capable of. That's when you lose them, in my opinion.
Yep.
So I was doing this gimmick, which again, I used to party. So I guess it was something that was relevant to what I was at that time. I was doing a raver gimmick, and it just was not connecting at all. So I would always never be on shows, maybe be on a pre-show if I was lucky. until I finally said, I'm going to change this up and I'm going to be who I am. I'm going to be Jay Vidal. And after going to Future Stars of Wrestling, having the brain of one of my coaches now, Sin Bodhi, who is phenomenal with in-ring psychology and character work. He helped me navigate where I should take my quote-unquote my gimmick. And it went from like working pre-shows to finally, you know, getting a one-on-one match. And now that turns into, okay, now the promoter, Joe DeFalco, sees what I got in me. And he starts giving me more opportunities. And next thing you know, I'm on the main card. I'm on, you know, the same show with guys like Hammerstone, who is also, you know, with PCW as well. So it's you've got a lot of talent in one place, and not everybody's going to be featured. But the fact that I was able to rise above that and be one of the cornerstones, I guess, in my opinion, of Future Stars of Wrestling. I'm not one to always give myself pats on the back, but that was a hard one for me because it was over a year and a half of just grinding until I got it.
Was there any fear of going to Vegas and understanding you had that issue before with the party lifestyle, going to a place that's probably, if Miami's 1A, Vegas might be 1B as far as like party towns in America?
Gangrel was worried about it, believe it or not. He sat down and he had that conversation with me. Like, he didn't think at first it would be a good idea for me to go because of that. He was worried that I would get involved in partying over there.
It's really easy to relapse into that kind of thing. I've done it myself.
Yeah, without a doubt. My thing moving out here, and I'm grateful that I've kept it this way, was that I'm going to surround myself with professional wrestlers only. I'm not going to surround myself with party people, just with hungry people, because you are a reflection of the top five people that you hang around. So coming out here, I was able to make friends, or, you know, like a little family, I would say, with guys like Damian Drake, who's extremely talented, Matt Vandergriff, who I consider to be a brother to me. Like, I can't speak highly enough about him and his talent, his work ethic. And Zoe Stark, I knew her back as Lacey Ryan. Like, together, all three of us would train. Like, we would just like, around the time of the pandemic, when the pandemic first hit, when they were first starting to shut everything down, we would all just like get together, go to the gym, and always do cardio together, always do in-ring cardio, always do in-ring work together. My first match back since the pandemic, I actually wrestled Lacey Ryan, Zoe Stark in a one-on-one match. And it was, you know, one of my favorite matches over at FSW.
That's awesome. So I saw Vandergriff pretty much, I'm from San Diego, so I saw Vandergriff pretty much from the start, him working down here. That guy is a special talent.
Yes, he is extremely talented, extremely talented. And again, I can't speak highly enough about his work ethic and just him as a person. You know, like he outside of the ring, he'll seem very quiet, but once you break through to that, he is just a beautiful human being. I can't speak highly enough about him.
And he's got a good support system too. I know his family was at shows that down here in San Diego, and I'm the one show I went to Vegas, they were there as well. So it's probably really nice to have that kind of support system around him as well.
Oh yeah, I believe his dad is a huge wrestling fan. I actually got the pleasure of meeting his mom and dad. So they are really amazing people. Yeah, they're always at the shows when they can be.
It reflects from him, you know, from the parents to how he's become as a person as well.
Yes.
All right. So you've done some work for Impact. Where else have you worked at recently as your career is on the rise?
Well, let's see. I was blessed enough to do Effie's Big Gay Brunch for Tampa this year, which was awesome. Like, you know, yeah, it was like a presented by GCW. So it was Effie's Big Gay Brunch. For Mania weekend, actually. And man, that you talk about just a high, like that was a high in and of itself, because to me, being getting to be a part of a show that involves the LGBTQ community in wrestling, and, you know, having somebody like Effie see something in you, because Effie to me is like the godfather of the gays in wrestling. He literally, like, and I always say him and Pero, he's a part of the End in NWA. Those two guys are my, I call them my gay dads in wrestling, because those guys, like, they protect me, they take care of me, they always got advice when I need it, and they help me try to get seen. And I also got to wrestle for Effie's Big Gay Brunch in Chicago, which I was a part of this amazing scramble match, and, you know, I ended up coming out victorious.
So, I mean, Effie's built an empire almost already now. He's pretty special guy as well.
Oh yeah, no, like I said, Effie's just about the kingpin, you know, the godfather of the gays when it comes to professional wrestling.
So, I mean, as somebody, as you're a member of the LGBTQ community, how important is it for you to see representation, or you to be, well, first to see Effie be successful, and then maybe to see somebody look up to you as well?
So Effie was definitely one of the first gay people that I saw in wrestling. Another person I saw in wrestling, which I messaged them and I let them know, both of them actually, Jamie Senegal and Sunny Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Those two inspired me to be able to be openly gay, to be able to openly represent the community. Because back then, if you know, reverse, only 5 years back, homophobic slurs were still being used in locker rooms. And that doesn't sound like it was a thing, but it definitely was, you know, like you would hear them. And I was in the closet my first 2 years in wrestling. Gangrel was the one who actually inspired me to come out, because he found out from somebody who I was training with that I was gay, or am gay, I should say. And he told me on one of those infamous car rides I was telling you about earlier, he pointed out to me, he's like, "Mijo, you gay?" And I was like, no, you know, I love women. And he's like, "Don't lie to me." And I said, "Yeah, you know, I'm gay." And he says, "Well, why don't you come out?" "Well, you know, the promoter, this and that." And he said, "No, you know, F that. If a promoter doesn't like you because you're gay, then he's not a good promoter and he shouldn't even be in wrestling anyways. You need to be who you are." And to a point where he even had a pride flag over at the Asylum. But to bounce back to now, I think representation is very important, because I didn't have a lot of people to look up to.
Mm-hmm.
In the LGBTQ community in wrestling. So because I didn't have a lot of people to look up to, there's LGBTQ fans. There is a big fan base in professional wrestling of LGBTQ fans. And I want to be somebody that they can look up to and, you know, see me with my painted nails and become being comfortable in my skin and say, if he could do it, I could do it. Like, going back to winning the Ultralight Championship, that was one of the first thoughts that actually came through my mind as I was staring down at the title in the middle of the ring at All Systems Go, was like, I did this for myself, but I also did this for the community.
So, this is going to be kind of a convoluted question, so stick with me here a second. Is there a want to just be a wrestler and not be a gay wrestler? Or you want to be known as a gay wrestler because you want to be seen representing the community? Does that make sense?
Yes, I think it is very important to be seen as a gay wrestler. I think it is very important to be seen as a gay wrestler who can go.
Yeah.
Because I am gay doesn't mean, or because, you know, my nails are painted because I might act feminine at some points, doesn't mean that I can't get in there with masculine men or more masculine men and go. Because what I am, quote unquote, outside the ring doesn't represent how hard I could go inside the ring. And I could do it looking cute with my hair slicked back and my nails painted. And and you know, there's like we all bleed red, but there's always layers to that as well. And I, you know, there are guys like Darren Young, who actually follow me on Instagram and Twitter, and he's always, you know, showing support and showing love, who I think would believe the same thing. Cause I remember when he came out, it was one of those eye-opening experiences. I'm sorry if I'm going all over the place with this too.
No, you're good.
It was one of those eye-opening experiences as well to me, where I was like, whoa, you could be gay in wrestling. Like, I remember almost wanting to cry at that point. So I'm hoping, again, to be that for somebody, that a kid sees that, maybe a kid who's in the closet. Because I was in the closet for a very long time. I didn't tell anybody that I was gay for fear that that my family wasn't going to accept me.
So was there fear the fans would say things to you too, or is there still fear the fans will use slurs with on you or to you?
It depends what city that I'm in. Not really a fear, just, you know, keeping an open eye. But surprisingly, I've had nothing but good reactions, even in the most rural areas. I remember I wrestled this, I call it a barnyard show. It was full on a show. We accepted a booking in, I want to say, Elk Grove,
Illinois,
California.
California. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And like the area, to a point where, like, I think everybody thought that, you know, the crowd was gonna boo me, and I was excited because I usually am a baby face. So at this point I was like, oh, I'm gonna be a heel, you know, just go out there and, you know, talk trash to them. And they loved it. So I think we're reaching a point now where it's being extremely socially accepted to be yourself, you know?
Yeah, that's why I still have fears, because I worry about a gay heel wrestler, how the fans would react to a gay heel wrestler. Cause I don't want to hear the fans start saying those sort of slurs and stuff. Cause that would enrage me, and I would have problems with that as a other fan in the stands.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. And I think that fans are smart enough to know what's right to say and what's not right to say. Mm-hmm. That goes with any, you know, with any sexual orientation, with any ethnicity, mm-hmm. with any pronouns. You do see it today, but you also see people correcting them and saying, hey, no, this is not okay.
Yeah. The fans are getting good at policing each other without violence, you know, just saying, hey, this is not accepted here.
Exactly. Accepted anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And if they are considerate enough, then they will change their ways. And if not, then, you know, then that's a battle that they face within themselves. I am a firm believer that we're all on our own spiritual journey.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll reject them as fans and not have them, not physically beat them or anything, but just not accept them in our community and just, you know, weed them out.
Exactly. And it's slow, but it's happening. And luckily the process has been speeding up over the last few years. Like you know, again, going back to PCW, if you were to tell me that I would be doing, you know, that I would be painting my nails and being PCW Ultralight Champion like 4 years ago, I don't know if I would have believed it. But now, you know, we're so socially accepting that here we are.
And that PCW, I mean, that that company is a launching pad for bigger, I won't say better, but like, you know, bigger things. You know, they've had so many stars come through that locker room that have gone on to other shows, you know, other companies.
Yes, they have, and I am completely honored to be one of them. You know, you have the Jake Atlases, you know, among Scott, others, the Darby's. It's crazy to see all this talent that has gone through those doors. And I remember one of the things that the Almighty Sheik, you know, what Joseph told me when I met him was, we're going to show you, hey, you know, we're going to put your mind where it needs to be in professional wrestling so that you can reach that next level. That's what I believe that PCW is about, helping, you know, putting on the absolute best shows, but also helping you reach that next level. They have a vested interest. You know, they want to see you succeed. They want to see you, you know, like give the best show that you got, but ultimately make it to, you know, that next stepping stone.
You would hope that all independent shows like that would do that, but I'm guessing it's not that way.
It's not always that way, no. But again, I'm grateful that I fell upon, you know, that the universe brought me over to here where there's actually people that do care.
So you talk about the next level. What does that mean to Jay Vidal? What does next level mean?
Man, like, you know, WWE or AEW, just being on a national stage where everybody could see your work. You always want to be the best at what you do, and to be the best at what you do, the world needs to see what you do.
What do you think you need to do to get there?
Hard work, determination, listening, soaking up knowledge. You never stop learning. One of my coaches, Sin Bodhi, always says, you know, I'm 25, I'm 30 years in, but it's like my first day. Mm. So it's to him, you know, he will even tell you that he's still learning to this day.
Mm. So you worked Impact Taping?
Yes, I was. I was lucky enough to what a weekend, huh? It wasn't going to be a sure thing. And out of nowhere, I get over there and one of the producers says, hey, you know, come over here, like, you know, get dressed, this and that. Come to find out, I'm having a match against Eric Young on his first match back. And man, what an honor. What an absolute honor just to be a part of, because I grew up watching, you know, watching TNA, watching Impact Wrestling. It's one of those things that when you're a wrestling fan and in that era where there was only WWE and TNA that you had easy access to. Mm-hmm. TNA was that other show, the other go-to. So, you know, guys like Eric Young, I actually grew up watching. So to share a locker room with him and, you know, share a ring with him ultimately was what an experience. Something, again, I never imagined would happen.
So tell me about the learning experience going to like a TV like that, the TV tapings. Tell me how that's helping you learn about the business as much as, you know, the in-ring stuff.
I think there's a lot of, it's more pressed on things such as time constraints. So it's more big on that, like, okay, you have X amount of minutes to run this segment. You know, like the TV, you know, working TV is a completely different animal than working a live crowd, because mm-hmm. you're more focused on the people at home. There's going to be more people watching you at home than there's going to be in that crowd. But at the same time, you also want to entertain that crowd so that they could perceive that energy to the people at home. So it is an amazing learning experience. And once I did it, I just remember thinking to myself, this is, I know I'm on the right path, because this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, working things like TV.
So companies like that come into town, how do they contact you? Do you contact them? How does that work?
I was lucky enough that I have the info. D'Lo Brown is one of the coaches over here at Future Stars of Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And luckily, him and Sin Bodhi were able to, you know, just get asked, hey, do you got any talent who I guess you kind of feel comfortable putting in there? And I'm grateful and honored that they thought about me. And I can't, I do believe that the episode airs next Thursday mm-hmm. on AXS. So I just being contacted and getting there, it was one of those things where you get contacted, but they also tell you, you know, it's not a sure thing, but come prepared. Mm-hmm. So until, like, you know, their talent meeting was done, you're just kind of sitting there like, okay, is it going to happen? Oh, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. You know, your hopes are kind of down. And I know, you know, D'Lo comes over and says, all right, kid, come with me. And I'm like, okay, it's happening. Wow. Okay. It's happening. I'll tell you what, like none of it felt real until the moment before I stepped out of that curtain, where I saw the TV monitors, Scott D'Amore, who's was nothing but amazing to me. right there, right next to me. Until you are right there in Gorilla, the nerves don't hit. But when those nerves hit, I had never actually shaken before. I've always had butterflies, but I've never like physically shaken. And I remember looking at my hand, I was just shaking before going out.
Eric Young seems like an animal too. He seems like he could tear you apart if he wanted to. Not you, but just anybody in general.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And just a tremendous talent. It's funny to talk about how things come full circle, because you see my first match, the finish to it was a pile driver. And now my first TV match, the finish to it was a pile driver as well. So it's funny to see how things like that come full circle. This time, you know, taking it from a legend like Eric Young, it's something that I will cherish forever. Again, it still feels surreal. I try to remember being in the ring, which is one of those things where the adrenaline was pumping, but I was sure to let myself know this time, all right, stop, look around, and soak it all in, because it's something you're going to remember for a lifetime.
Hey, what's your favorite thing about being a wrestler?
My favorite thing about being a wrestler is the high. There's a certain high that you get from it that you cannot get from any other drug. It's you, when you're in the middle of the ring and the crowd is behind you and the crowd is feeding you their energy. I'll bring back to PCW at All Systems Go during the double shot duel, that during the match, the energy that the crowd was giving out was like nothing else. You literally feed off of it. Your body might hurt, you might feel bruised, but the energy that they give you, well, it's almost, I want to compare it to like a video game when your character just soaks up health bars. That's exactly what it felt like. Like the energy that they give you just being through the roof, man, there's nothing else like it.
What is your biggest fear in wrestling?
I think my biggest fear in wrestling and in life in general is just saying no or not doing anything, not accomplishing the goals that I wish to accomplish. That's my, like, I want to go out of this planet knowing that I gave everything my all. Mm-hmm. I would like to be on my deathbed without regrets. Mm-hmm. So that's my biggest thing in wrestling and just in life in general. That's, you know, that's why we wake up every day. That's why we train, we turn down, like, you know, probably good regular jobs to do this, because we love it. There's a love for this.
Wrestling is such a subjective thing where people are as talented as you. And I don't want to say this, that just because, I don't know, I mean, it's not like a baseball player can go out there and hit 300 and get, you know, you can't stop them from being in the major leagues. But somebody as talented as you, something so subjective, it's so out of your hands, you know, where you getting there or not. I don't know. I think about that sometimes when I see some of these wrestlers, you know, that are super duper talented, but for some reason don't get that break. And I just wonder, you know, does that ever enter your thought, or you just keep grinding and see what happens?
Oh, I always stay optimistic with it. I'm a firm believer that everybody's time comes eventually. If you had guys like Bryan Danielson who were working the indies for 10 years before they were ever on a major wrestling promotion like the WWE, it kind of motivates you, like, okay, even, you know, my good friend, Zoe Stark, who was out here grinding for about 8 years before she was ever noticed. Things like that really push you and they motivate you. You just got to keep going, and your time, everybody's time comes eventually if you stay dedicated and you get out of it what you put into it. I'm a firm believer in energy. So if you believe that you'll make it one day, you will make it. If you genuinely believe that you will.
I agree. So Jay, where can we find you on social media?
You could find me at the JAIVIDAL, at the Jay Vidal on Instagram and on Twitter's. Hey, if you want to subscribe to the OnlyFans, that too. And you could actually see me, if you want to see me live, over December 9th. It looks like PCW will be having a show in Boyle Heights. And January 28th, 2022, which again, it sounds crazy to say, like we're saying 2022. I am extremely honored that I'm going to be not just a part of that show, but I believe, because I when I tell you I got a hold of this title, I don't think I'm going to be letting go of it anytime soon. Like, you got to bring a bulldozer and the weight of the world to crush me to take this title off my hands. I believe that I will be showing up to the anniversary show on January 28th as a PCW Ultralight Champion. So I will be at that show, and it's just an, again, it's an honor. Like, you see, again, all the talent that has come through PCW. And another thing that I want to go back on too, the legends, man. Like, they combined, you know, legends with younger guys.
Who called Scorpio is on the show.
Walking through the curtain, I was just about to get to that. Walking through the curtain, Too Cold Scorpio was complimenting us. Like, that's crazy to think about. Like, Too Cold Scorpio is over there, like, complimenting my work, complimenting Matt Vandergriff's work. And, you know, both of us are just staring at each other, like, oh my God, like, Too Cold Scorpio. you know, and again, guys like Joseph, guys like Kevin Sullivan, it's what an environment to be a part of. And now I'm gonna, oh, I even said hi to Ron Simmons at the show. I didn't know if he even, like, you know, saw me. And he said, because I dressed back up, and he said, you were working earlier, right? And I said, yeah. And he's like, good job. And I was like, oh my God, he just told me good job. It's, you know, memories that will last a lifetime of these guys that I grew up watching, who now get to see me do what I've been working so hard to do. I look forward to seeing Stan Hansen. I never thought in a million years I would be able to meet Stan Hansen.
I hear he's blind as a bat, so if he tries to close on you, duck.
Okay. We'll knock my head right off, but man, it would be an honor to take that.
Do you have any international aspirations to go around the world and wrestle?
Yes, I've always wanted to wrestle in Japan. That is a goal of mine. I've always
you'd fit right in over there, I think.
Right? Like, I don't think that they got, you know, like a Dave Idol-esque character over there. I would love to wrestle in Japan. I would also love to wrestle in Mexico. I've done lucha shows in California, and you get like that taste of what lucha fans are like. And they are a whole different animal.
I'll have to talk to the guys at The Crash and get you booked in a show on Tijuana.
Oh my God, I would love that. As I said, like, Mexico is an absolute goal of mine as well. You know, the sky's the limit. The sky is the limit. If I could say that I wrestled in those, you know, countries before I die, then I will be happy. But the goal is to wrestle everywhere, to say that, you know, have a story for every country, for every state, for every place, and say, oh yeah, I remember, you know, give like those, you know, those long-winded stories around a campfire one day. That's the ultimate goal. And to inspire people along the way, because, you know, that's give back, I guess, is the biggest thing. We gotta give back.
Yeah, always. I think that's very important just in life as well, not to always be taking, but always to give back again as well.
Yes, it's an energy. It's motion. Yeah, like, I always think about that. Sorry to continue going over here, but
no, you're good.
I always think about that with students as well. I've started helping out more with training students over at Future Stars Wrestling, and it's such a good feeling in your gut knowing that you help somebody, you know, do an arm drag, or, you know, and you see like their face light up once they get it. And I'm like, wow, I remember when I was there. Like, and if you could capture that energy in a bottle, nothing like it.
I love it. I love it. He is the PCW Ultralight Champion. Every season is Jay season. Jay, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. And again, you can see me December 9th at PCW Ultra in Boyle Heights. And you can see me again on January 28th, 2022 for the anniversary show for PCW Ultra. And I promise you, as you said, every season is J season. I shall be Ultralight Champion for as far as the eye could see. My town, my street. Give me peace of mind that can't be beat.